Joseph James D'Angelo, the 72-year-old arrested in Citrus Heights, also known as the Golden State Killer. D'Angelo is accused of a violent crime spree of at least 12 murders and more than 50 rapes, beginning in Sacramento County in 1976 and spreading across the state for at least a decade.
From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very impromptu episode of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. John and I were meant to record today anyway, but we were meant to do a Bruce Lee commentary. Guys, that's going to be pushed back on the back burner for a few weeks. Don't worry about Bruce Lee. He's dead, so it doesn't really matter. So I got with me, so I got Stuart here. I got John over in Colorado. Hello, John.
Hello.
And returning, very special guest, probably couldn't do this episode without him. We have Mr. Gian Quasar back. Say hello, Gian.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. It is a huge pleasure to have you back. Okay, so my fat ass has been sleeping for the last few hours. People, John, what's been happening? You guys run with it.
Well, we said we would do another show about the Irons, now known as the Golden State Killer, and apparently was also the Visalia Ransacker and the original Night Stalker, East Area Rapist, East Side Rapist. This guy's got a lot of names now. We said we would do another show on this topic when he was arrested, and that has happened overnight. Started getting the news as soon as I logged on this morning. He has been arrested, and he is a Joseph James D'Angelo of Sacramento, California. And I've been chatting with John about it all day, and we've been kind of going over the info and theories and trying to see what's been kind of wrong about this case in terms of the clues that have been put out there in the public and what's right about it. John, anything you want to introduce to this topic?
I'm stunned by it all, considering, you know, since 2011, all the man hours I put into it and everybody else, based on what was out there, to find, you know, that basically all the sketches were no good. They had, some of them had to be of somebody else, just some kid in the neighborhood with long, bushy hair. This guy was a cop. For those who don't know, it turns out that he was an Auburn, California police officer in Auburn's northeast of Sacramento. It's just beyond Roseville, and Roseville touches Citrus Heights, where he lived, and Carmichael, the East area where he struck so much. And obviously had short hair the whole time, and was never clearly seen by anybody. He could not be most any of the prowlers that inspired these. Well, Sacramento sheriffs have 36 I know of. A lot of them have never been released, sketches, identikits. And there's just none out there that really reflect him, even those that say, oh, I can see him now in this Majora double murder composite. I really don't see anything that was very good. But many people spent, sometimes since these sketches got out on the web, so in the early 21st century, going through old yearbooks, going through mug shots, going through court records, trying to collate everything, seeing if they couldn't pick up this guy's scent and nail him. And of course, those sketches never could have led to this guy. It is just stunning, not only that he was a police officer, an active police officer at the time, but that he did not look like anything that was out there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's vague resemblance in some of those sketches. Yeah, you know, it's vague. It's like a vague resemblance, but it's not. Nothing's a bullseye.
No. Nothing is even that close that you can see in other sketches of, you know, famous cases that have been solved.
Yeah.
And I just don't think anybody, you know, there. I don't know what all of his connections are, so we can't rule out, you know, auto wrecking is what I pursued.
Right.
And I thought from all the evidence, this was what fit best, because Crompton in his book, Sudden Terror, which I have a high praise for, mentioned all the stalking automobiles that were reported in the neighborhood. And then Shelby got far more detailed in his Hunting a Psychopath, and that really put the light bulb on over my head when Shelby went into all these driver's license plates that turned out to be linked to this and that wrecking yard to a car that had been wrecked sometimes a year before the incident when they were reported in the neighborhood. Well, I thought, who else could have all these different old jalopies and be able to switch out wrecked plates? And so I continued to methodically go through auto wreckers, and then I would compare those to any kind of picture I could find in court records. And that was my whole method. And up for good or bad, I had inspired a lot in law enforcement as well. And they were following on my trail sometimes. Roy Ellison, who was a really good guy, he was the supervisor, now retired at Orange County Cold Case Homicide. He's the one who contacted me and was very receptive to following up on my persons of interest. He's the one that I gave RP to, my first one.
Right.
And even when RP, who was one of the younger members ephemeral to all this, was ruled out, he thought I was still on the right avenue. And then I found out that one of the detectives, Ken Clark in Sacramento, thought this was a very good theory, because he turned it up now in the Cordova cat, in this cat burglar that was active in Rancho Cordova and the East area in the exact same places as the East area rapist, hit even one of the same victims, hit the homes within a block where the East area rapist would later strike in a few years. And they, in Sacramento County, spending all those thousands of man hours going through the old records, came across the cat burglar, and then found out in one case the detective at that time could trace a wrecked plate to this guy. He'd gone on a joyride, he had driven around, and he had gotten gas and tires for his car, and they took down the license plate, and the detective found out that this car, that this license plate truly belonged to, had been wrecked a month before the robbery.
Huh.
And so this just, that just sounded too good, that auto wrecking had been involved, and the Cordova cat was the early episode of the East Area Rapist before he got the guts to start raping. I don't know how true that is. Now, we don't know enough to rule him out or rule him in. But certainly any composite, any description, I have heard the descriptions, and this cat burglar was described as, you know, shoulder length, brown hair, and 140, 150 pounds, and everything that would suggest EAR, until we find out now that he was a police officer in Exeter, California at this time, and then a police officer up here in Auburn at this time, and he had short hair, obviously, the whole time.
Yeah, because cops could not have long hair back in those days.
No,
they couldn't
obviously
they couldn't be Serpico.
So, and so how many guys really use this kind of MO? How unique was it after all this time?
Yeah.
It's just astounding. It's not like there was just bad stuff out on the web. I have to know the police were very sincere in tracking all this information. And they had come to believe, by the early 21st century, as far as I can tell, that EAR had been very, very young in 1976 when he began. Shelby echoed that in his book. They thought this was just a local punk.
Right.
And all the bike riding episodes instilled in us, you know, that he was very young. But it seems that these were somebody else, that this guy, if he rode a bike, which he did sometimes, it was only at night when no one could tell that he was actually 31 years old.
Right.
Because in the daytime, that's going to stand out.
Yes, definitely.
Someone can say, hey, that's a cop that lives close to me. This guy couldn't afford to be identified.
Right, right.
How,
so that's...
How he prowled is still a mystery compared, you know, compared to what we know. All these prowling reports can't all be him. And I certainly wasn't going door to door ringing bells.
Right. And some of the early cases, we've discussed this offline, but it's the way he would like kick down doors and stuff. It's almost like, you know, now that we think about it and now that we're seeing these clues, it's like, oh, well, yeah, he could have been a cop because of the way he kicked down the door in one rape. And
that's something that would have done in police training, wouldn't they?
Number three was the only one. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, just saying, when they kick down doors, it's something they would have learned in the police training academy, obviously.
Yes. Yeah.
I suppose they would. But then this guy was so, well, you know, he vaulted through a window with naked from the waist on down.
Jeez.
That's something pretty gymnastic. I wouldn't think a cop could do that. And that's number three. This is where he did it, at number three on Malaga Way, and victim number three. And she's the only one out of all of them to say he had the posture and bearing of a police officer or military.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not, you know, it was only one victim out of all these victims that said that, and I don't think it really registered with everybody. They might have thought ex-military, which he was Navy, as it turns out, and a Vietnam vet. But I don't think cop really registered, because then she said, "Well, he was such a small guy. If he didn't have a gun, she thought she could have taken him." Now, I don't know how big she was, but we now know this guy was 5'11" back then, and that's not the 5'6" to 5'10" foot tall guy they thought he was.
Yeah, the description seemed very off on the height, and I'm guessing if he's 140 pounds, I guess he's a pretty lean guy. So, but you know, looking at the old photos, he looks kind of chubby in the face. So it's hard to say.
He does in 73. He clearly lost some weight from that 73 photo where Exeter welcomes him as a police officer. I forget the month that came out, but you look at that picture and it doesn't look like anybody. Any of those sketches.
Had this guy's name.
The older picture in the 1960s looks more like the Majora double murder.
It sure does.
But not at the time.
Right.
Had this guy's name ever been mentioned before in the past as a POI? At all?
No, I don't think so, because they would have pursued it, I think. No one would even think to consider an Auburn police officer living in Citrus Heights, I don't think.
That goes back to Zodiac. I swear, there's something in the police force there that's holding back the information of revealing the real Zodiac. But that's another story for another time. The thing I wanted to ask about was, they said they've got 100% DNA on this guy on the, was it Maggiore murders?
No, it was the Smith murder in Ventura.
Okay.
Basically, Ventura and the FBI did this. I think they alerted the other jurisdictions only within the last week.
And when were those murders? Was it late
70s? 1980. March 1980, I believe.
Okay, so I'm just sorry. How would they have gotten the DNA that far back, nearly 40 years ago, to link to this guy?
He raped her and then murdered her, so they did preserve the DNA in the murder and were able to link it to him when... recently, because of all the promotion, I suppose, of the documentary, then everything on the web, the daughter, as I understand it, finally turned him in. And then she surreptitiously got his DNA and submitted it. And they, I don't even know if they sent it to the FBI. From the press conference, it sounded like they did it right here in their lab in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And then it registered 100%. And they knew they had the guy. There would not have been come about any other way, unfortunately. You know, I had wanted this to be, if it wasn't me, I had wanted this to be solved the old Holmesian way, where all the clues are put together, and the guy followed the trail, and then came up with it, and then could say, you know, elementary, my dear Watson, it would be so obvious to all of us. But in fact, it seems like that would have been extremely difficult to have ever accomplished with the information out on the web. And in fact, it took, as the those in the know told me in the very beginning, they said, your gray cell method will never solve these kind of cases are solved by an ex-spouse or a child, a relative, turning the guy in. And that's what happened. The daughter found some of the stuff he stole, apparently, too, and then got them the DNA. And so basically no one was able to solve this through the traditional detective method of finding the guy through the clues and then using DNA to prove it.
So how many
remember to turn him in?
So how many people or how many murders, etc., will D'Angelo be charged with that you know of at the moment?
I don't know. He's been charged with four now. Sacramento, I was surprised, charged him with circumstances for the Majora double murders. And right. Ventura has most definitely charged him. They're the ones that put the warrant out for the Smith murder. So it won't be long before Orange County and then Santa Barbara issues their warrants because they have DNA on those cases as well. And any other murders, I don't know. I'm told he's talking. So how much is he going to confess to? I don't know. I was shocked to hear that the rumors are that he's confessing to being the Visalia ransacker.
Yeah.
And all any of us had to go on was this fat, pudgy guy with a high effeminate voice that had really short blonde hair and had a big rump, was pear-shaped, had big calves. His short legs, short fingers. This is all how the Visalia police officer McGowan described the guy that shot at him, and he was sure he was the Visalia ransacker. Well, who would want to compare that to the description of the East Area rapist, who was much more gymnastic, similar height, but lot less weight, darker hair, it seemed. And so Sacramento got in a big beef back then with Visalia, in which the Sacramento County Sheriff's Representative Ed Miller even said this is impossible. It's just Visalia. They're being unprofessional by trying to link the two. This was in 1978 already. And we compared 9 points of modus operandi and we discounted six of them. And now, you know, what can we make of all this? There was no real evidence back then, supposedly, to link him. I don't think McGowan saw the right guy or he couldn't describe him. If that's how it came out, because that certainly is not D'Angelo, and it certainly was not the East Area rapist.
John, do you think it might have been a shock effect after the Visalia ransacker shot his flashlight? Maybe, possibly, he got his description jumbled? I don't know.
I don't know. I was going to write about this. Now I don't have to anymore.
Yeah.
But reading those old Visalia Times Delta newspapers, you see how they elaborate, and, you know, this is how McGowan describes him. You see the famous composite of the ransacker. But then another report says we saw him with a ski mask on. Well, how can you describe him? And then he took the ski mask off, though, when he was screaming for help on the ground before he shot at him. But then it says Beth Snelling then also went through hypnosis. You know, she was supposedly kidnapped by him. And she described him likewise. She backed this up. Well, she saw him with a ski mask the whole time. We know that.
Right.
And then other neighbors say, those who saw the ransacker say this matches the guy they saw. This matches the guy they saw on Dolner Street doing all the prowling in March 1976 after all these events that he was still around. You really can't rely on it. There's three composites, and they're all very similar of the ransacker, and he had a fat baby face, according to all
of them. Yeah.
And, you know, is this our guy? And I would never make the connection based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Have any photos surfaced of D'Angelo in the last, say, 12 hours since this has all exploded onto the...
Yes, a lot of his Navy photo.
Oh, they have.
Photo as a cop with a mustache. His high school grad photo from Folsom High School, 1964. His,
oh, boy.
Intoxicated look before the camera. His mugshot now. He looks like he's a bit bombed at now at 72 years old.
Yeah. That's the only picture I've seen of him.
His formal photo when he became an Exeter police officer. And I can just, in his Navy photo from 65 or 66, I can see a similarity. I can see this evil, gaunt look that could be the Majora double murderer. But other than that, I would not see any kind of connection here. There's a vague connection with him at the mustache. If you take the mustache off.
Yeah.
But he certainly didn't have long, floppy hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did he shoot Rod Miller? Rod Miller did that composite. His father, I'm told, did the other identikit that was considered so reliable,
mm-hmm.
with the long floppy hair and the morose eyes, the long face that looks so similar to the Sarda Way perp from 1973 that convinced some of us to think they were linked. And he could not have been that because he had short hair. He was an active cop in 77.
This has basically just exploded over the last few hours, all this, like, just out of nowhere. Gian, what's the first you heard of it, through whom, if you can say, and when?
a defense attorney last night talked to a friend of mine who pimps this heavily online and their friends, and she was already prepared at 10 o'clock last night that there had been an arrest. And then this morning it was being confirmed on the news, and of course I was getting all these messages, was this your POI, was this that, and then one guy said, this is right down the street from me, and he was going to go take pictures. And so I would say, you know, we're all still very cautious because we've heard there was a suspect arrested last night, and then someone put it on Reddit, and it got on the web, and I was still very cautious this morning because I didn't know if this was a link to someone that they could now definitely link to EAR, and so they might consider him an accomplice. You know, he might have received stolen goods. I didn't know what it could be. But then it's more and more that you could see the warrant was issued by Ventura, and it was for murder, two counts of murder. And apparently they got him, and it took us hours then before we heard that it was a family member who turned him in. And it must have been to Ventura, obviously. So I suspect she saw the interviews recently with the documentaries and everything with Smith's daughter, Jennifer Smith.
Yeah.
And got very suspicious of her father and finally turned him in. And they must have rushed this. I know how long it takes to get DNA without a rush. And it's 3 months turnaround.
Oh, really?
And this had to have happened just within the last couple of weeks, I would say. Because I was talking with investigators before that time, and it's obvious that they had no clue that anything was coming up.
Jeez. It's surreal.
Something I had.
Surreal.
What?
It's surreal, isn't it? That they've caught him.
It is, yeah. I'm sitting here just stunned. Nothing this big has been solved like this, you know, after such a concerted effort by many of us to get the word out and keep the word out and try and solve it. You know, EAR, despite all the press, he was still not as big as the Zodiac. You know, this is not something the world would immediately connect with. He had a lousy handle, I understand, and I hate the Golden State Killer title. I would never use that, and I made that very clear, that that is just from a PR agent. Mm. It doesn't reflect accuracy. But none of those names are very good. But Zodiac, Jack the Ripper, I mean, if people heard that that was solved, we're talking about such major news, you couldn't imagine it. But this was really growing. He was beginning to get a towering reputation in the mainstream, not just in true crime. He was certainly the biggest thing in true crime right now. But I still don't think the mainstream connected as much, because it was still something relatively new to them.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, it's a whirlwind.
Hopefully, I helped.
I was going to say, I mean, people like yourself, people like Shelley Cruz, Michelle would have, you know, a real sort of person who helped pioneer, you know, the victims coming out and or family of victims coming out and speaking up and try and help get this guy caught, and obviously. You have a big hand in it. There's other people out there who I won't name who I really think didn't do much, but will take a lot of credit for it. yeah. make your own assumptions from there. And, you know, I mean, this stupid little podcast, I mean, may have done a, you know, sprinkle of help, but I don't know how much. But it's not the point. The point is just getting the word out over the last few years, like you have done, and others out there, and you know, finally getting the screws tightened on this guy. I mean, the thing is, well, you got to wonder. Did you wonder to yourself, John, that this guy has probably visited your website numerous times and probably even posted on boards? And
I don't know. We're going to have to find out. Citrus Heights ISPs would come in. A lot more frequently of late, so I don't know if that was his daughter. Or I don't think it was him. I don't know how tech responsible he was. I'm hearing things that he was a heavy drinker, and so I don't know how in tune he was. But one thing in all my analysis I was right about, and I would not budge, is that he never left Sacramento. I'd always made that clear. There was no evidence this guy ever moved abroad, because the further he struck from Sacramento, the closer it was to a highway, and nothing indicated he was very familiar with the areas outside of Sacramento. And why would he be skittish about coming back? I mean, we have to remember back then, he was known only, you know, EAR was only known as a rapist, which had only a 3.5-year statute of limitations.
Okay.
He was not connected to any murders. Even the Majora double murders back then contemporarily were not associated with him. The murders down south that started in December 1979 were not linked together down there for the most part, let alone to him. And so why would he not just, you know, come back to where he lived here already in Citrus Heights with his family and think himself, you know, safe? There's no reason why he wouldn't consider himself safe. He was not prosecutable anymore by the mid-1980s for all that he had done in the rapes, and the murders were not even associated with him. So he probably thought it's fine to live in his old neighborhood in Citrus Heights.
He had been a cop.
No one was suspecting a cop.
I don't know
what he did afterward. We didn't say how what they found on the web, but he was fired from being an Auburn police officer because, of all things, he was caught shoplifting dog repellent and a flashlight at a sports store.
Oh, boy, flashlight.
And, he would, and dog repellent. You would wonder why this guy, he must have had enough of an income as a police officer. Why would he even bother to shoplift such petty items? And then he got caught. Here's this guy that is so careful with prowling, with covering his trail, with all these attacks, 50 or more, and then the murders that he would do later, and yet he actually got caught for shoplifting such petty items. Isn't that ironic?
And I kind of wonder if that jumped out at any of law enforcement researchers, if they went over old files.
Well, someone found it on the web after he was already nailed.
Yeah.
And so I think now it makes sense to everybody, you know, dog repellent and a flashlight.
No, yeah.
I just can't figure why he didn't pay the couple bucks. How much would that have cost in 1979?
Did he possibly have some just sort, I mean, obviously he had a weird way of thinking, and, you know, it's, could he have thought, oh, they'll trace the dog repellent purchase to me or something? It's hard to think of how his brain was working.
He stole petty, you know, pointless stuff. Maybe just when he saw something that was valueless, he thought it was just worth stealing. Maybe he had the reverse idea. Something valuable is not worth stealing, but something of little value, just take it. It's not worth paying for.
Unless he was known as a police officer in the area, and people would have thought, well, why are you buying dog repellent and a flashlight? Wouldn't they be standard police issue for you guys?
You would think, yeah. He'd have it in his cruiser. We still have to figure out just what all he was up to, because the license plate issue and these old jalopies are going to have to be figured out. Either they were all a coincidence, or there was a connection through in-law status, and he borrowed cars, and no one thought of it because he was a cop in the family. In my research, see, I limited to auto-wrecking families, and then I researched the in-laws and so forth, someone who would be in a position of trust within the greater business. But I didn't, you know, I would not go far out into an in-law that was not associated with the business, because I just couldn't conceive how they would be getting cars and license plates regularly. You'd have to be working within the business to do that.
True.
Frequently, as they were reported. And so, but I do think he had some contacts there through in a Del Deo family. We'll see what turns up, because they're going to be looking at every angle now.
Yeah.
He worked all this. He had no real estate angle, to my knowledge, and yet it looked like EAR was always working new developments, real estate. It's just amazing. You know, I was certain in my prime POI in auto wrecking, I had to be the guy because everything pointed to him. His auto wrecking establishment was even surrounded by a cement-lined canal. I thought, well, this isn't work. He could have trained. Here he has auto wrecking on one side, a cement canal on the other. And on the other side, it was the county outlet, county headquarters for the water board, the water service. And I thought, well, he could get a map there of all the canals. Who's going to question that? And he lived in a trailer home on there, and then moved it to the Rancho Cordova area.
I mean, we're just in.
This guy just fit.
Yeah, we're in early stages about learning about D'Angelo. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more to come out just yet.
But how could he make all these hang-up phone calls when he's got a wife? He's not calling from a secretive business that we know yet. Again, if he might have in-laws, I don't know. But he's making all these hang-up phone calls. Well, I've heard phone booths before, yeah.
Yeah.
That's possible. But that's an awful long time to be away from home. And before the Majora double murders, he's calling at 8 p.m. The whole week in advance, all these different people, so he's dialing one after the other.
Could have been in a phone booth during work hours. No one's going to suspect if he's away at work that he's off doing something else when he should be at home.
I suppose, yeah, just parks his car there and then makes a phone call from a phone booth. They can't trace it to him.
No.
Yeah.
And if he's a police officer, in a phone booth, no one's going to question a police officer in a phone booth. They didn't have cell phones back then.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's just calling in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if he's pinching plates from a wreck, cops go take care of the accidents and all that. And if a plate is just laying there from the wreck, he could pick it up and throw it in the trunk of his cruiser.
Yeah, that's it. Anybody was to question him, he'd just say it's just evidence required.
Yeah, or he's just cleaning up. They pick up all the stuff that could get puncture tires or whatever. They're going to clean up the accident scene, what's left, because they sit there writing up their report after everything's gone.
The interesting thing when I found out about this through John was that how many more now murders or rapes will come to the light after the original run of the East Area Rapist ONS?
I don't know. There are those who wish to link a murder of some of those girls down in the Exeter area around Visalia, and now they found out this guy was a cop down there. Donna Joe Redmond, is it? Is that one of the cases?
I believe so. It sounds familiar, like one of the cases chatted about.
One of the Visalia operatives I had just mentioned that to me, that people are wondering if the wrong guy's not serving prison sentence.
Mm.
Jeez.
Wow.
And I have to hear about all the contacts. Someone I know in Visalia is with the family that has an undertaking in Exeter, and they're the ones that put his mom down when she died in 2010 or 2013, whenever it was. So people are now finding links between them and his family in both Exeter, Visalia, up here in Sacramento, of course.
Jeez.
I think there's a lot more to come out yet. There will be a lot more to come out. We're in the early stages of this, knowing about this D'Angelo guy.
Well, we obviously know now he didn't have a German surname. All that stink made about this rare German-English background, which people didn't understand why I was so adamant about writing about bogus DNA. I put these pages up, and I couldn't say some of it. I already knew. I can talk more now behind the scenes of what I knew and what I was being told. But I knew that the DNA was false. That got published in a book and had led people to believe that it was real and that he was German-English, whatever that might mean, and that this DNA Y markers led to these rare German surnames, which we can mention now because they're pointless. Smith was one of them, Schmidt. That's not a very rare name. Or Lahnmann or Streckel or Unkeffer. And someone was out there really promoting going after these German or anglicized German names like Little, which had to be Klein originally.
Mm.
And he was Scandinavian and all this according to DNA, which didn't mean anything. His mother was actually of Dutch heritage. His father clearly had some Italian background at one point.
Mm.
And the DNA was false, I knew that, and I knew there's no point in even linking to a surname because was made very plain to me by the guys how this works, by the detectives, how the Y markers work in trying to uncover paternal lines. that a surname is only going to indicate national origin. It has nothing to do with ethnicity,
no.
which, of course, is obvious.
Yeah.
Many Ashkenazim Jews have German surnames. Many people in Eastern Europe do, and they're not German. And so all this bogus stuff about DNA going to link him to Germans and this rare surname, well, obviously, is completely false. And I was being told that no one was paying attention to that within law enforcement because there was nothing to it. And obviously that's proven true now. A name like D'Angelo.
Yeah, it's. I was surprised to see that name. And the interesting thing about this case is now that he's been arrested is like it's kind of changed the narrative on how we're going to start looking at these old mysteries, I think.
Yeah, how we have built. I helped build him up as the real life Michael Myers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as this young guy. Then I shifted more to. I could only update a couple of pages 2 weeks ago where I changed the bio and said he must be in his 70s now.
Right.
I'm not going to bother to update anything more because it's pointless.
Yeah.
But we all started shifting at the end with the Cordova cat information. It was just too obvious this guy had to be older if that was him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that he was around 30 at the time, which is what we find was correct. But we're going to have to really think about how he prowled. It wasn't in the daytime. I don't think it was as much as we thought he was prowling.
Right.
I don't think there was as much ingenuity in... Well, I don't know how I could have gotten everybody's phone number other than the Polk directories, which were enough back then. But it's he's going to be, I think, have to be reclassified when you find out that he was a full-time cop.
I mean,
he couldn't be devoting all this time, all these Prowler reports. They all can't be him. He certainly wasn't all these young guys inspiring these sketches out there jogging with long, you know, blondish hair in their 20s. And blue eyes.
Yeah. Or walking around with
He had hazel eyes.
Yeah, walking around with a three-toed dog and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a real blonde kid, tow-headed blonde kid, so that was not him. Just too much static got out there, and it was being believed by the police. Because by the time I was got on the web, these reports were so old, they were scattered about, and a lot of jurisdictions had copies and were letting some stuff out, and they had other jurisdictions in stuff and never gave it back. So sketches were being leaked out that were Sacramento County sketches, and they didn't have it in Sacramento County anymore at all. It wasn't in their files. And I don't think anybody really had a handle on the case. It took a relative again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, to turn him in rather than good detective skills,
and
which they
good
all
on
tried,
her.
You know.
Good on her for
everybody's
turning
been
him
wrong.
In Good on the daughter. Well done for turning him in. She could have easily said, well, it's my father. It's horrible crimes, but he's still my... No, she just said this is wrong and just, you know, done the right thing.
Well, he may have been a rotten father, though. We don't know about his personal life yet.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
we don't know.
There's rumors already from neighbors talking, some saying he was pretty mean. So, or somebody said he was a childhood friend of the daughter's and didn't like going over there because the guy had anger management issues. So, these are just online rumors. This is what's kind of being shot around places like Reddit and some of the Facebook groups and such. But some of this information is being confirmed as accurate and some not confirmed yet. Because, you know, if you hear about it on NPR or you read like a newspaper, you get the vaguest, it's a very vague surface of the story. You're not getting much, especially if you know a lot about it. Like those of us who just kept reading about it online, reading John's site and everything. It's just like, yeah, it's not enough. It's not going to tell you anything. So we're emphasizing the esoteric information in the case right now.
Well, I heard how nice he was to some neighbors. He helped one build a pool and build a fence. And
yeah, I heard that.
He would be shouting at himself when he got frustrated, they said. So there was just this old guy who was shouting at himself, and they could hear him down the block, which makes me sound, you know, think this guy had a pretty good voice.
Right.
He wasn't some weaselly little effeminate-sounding voice like we thought he would have.
Exactly.
I think he pounded the bottle pretty good. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if he was, having some fits at that time, or I always thought the anger, the way it was always presented in the books, and if you did speak with some of the victims in real life, I always thought it was all an act, even the anger, until he really did go berserk and, you know, was going nuts on people. But I thought most of it was just an act. the sobbing, you know, I thought, I'm still not sure if that's not an act.
Yeah.
Because then he would carefully go through the house. They would hear him go through the house and make sure he didn't leave anything. And then
right.
he would threaten, and he would go through all this again. So it's not like he was really repentant. I don't know. It's a lot's going to have to be, we're just going to have to get rid of a lot of static and let it come out in questioning. I'm sure the major profilers just want to spend months with this guy
mm-hmm.
because he was so careful. He broke the mold in profiling.
Yeah, because they all thought he wasn't law enforcement, and there's no way he could have made it through boot camp. That seemed to be you know, none of the profiles really mentioned anything of the deficit service.
No one figured how he could be working. A guy that spends this much time prowling, this, you know, many times making phone calls, this much time preparing in advance.
Yeah.
You know, prowling. He was sometimes hours in a neighborhood, it seemed, before prowling through, before he would strike, following canals and all this. How could someone possibly hold down a job? Especially police officers, how long did they work a day back then?
Right.
I'd be curious to know, actually, and this is just a, you know, just a small smidgen of a curiosity, if the gonna kill you phone call was him or just some prank call. I mean,
I don't know. See, I began to suspect that when I started shifting toward the 30, you know, last summer when I became September, when I was sure that RP was now not it. And it had to be my older guy at 33.
Hmm.
I really wondered what kind of, you know, effeminate voice could someone have. That sounds like a little kid on the phone.
It does.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
And that made me convinced, too, that I was looking at a younger age group amongst all my auto-wrecking persons of interest. So I was looking at a younger member of the family, which is what I went after first. Even
and
though, you know, it really looked like an owner was involved.
Right.
But now in retrospect, I wonder if this is not a crank kid who got some of their numbers and started making the phone calls.
Because yeah, and also
you got to play it. It sounds like a kid with a nasal problem.
Yeah, and the Is Ray There call sounds like a young guy. Sounds
yeah,
like a teenager.
It does.
So it does not sound like
unless
a cop.
It's just coincidence.
Right. It could be. You know, it's like, but. You know, we put it up there is likely him, and that's how that's been released. Those audios have been released. It's I'd be curious, just I guess in sort of a tangent of a belief that you know, I'd like to see the unreleased sketches to see if any of them match him.
I would too. You know, I'd like to see all three dozen released. They were going to release the American Pet Association guy, who was supposedly really weird. He's the one up in Citrus Heights on Envoy that went up to the girl's door and said, you know, have you had your dog spayed? I'm with the American Pet Association. She thought he was weird. And it was like one of those knocks he's seeing at someone's home. You know, knock on the door, and then he has to have some stupid excuse when he realizes someone is at home.
Right.
And here he has, you know, he's knocking on their door just to see if the house is empty. But the neighbor also said, this guy only went to your house. He didn't go to anybody else's house. And that's what made this nut so suspicious. But from what I'm told, that sketch looks like the La Rive Man sketch, which wouldn't look like him anyway, but we'll
right.
have to see. But I grew jaded about all these sketches. I was going to write how necessary a phenotype really is. Finally see what this guy looks like, because there's too much contradiction here. The age is
yeah.
too much older. And then with Sacramento County detectives very eloquently making their case that this guy could have been the guy that said he was 31 years old and came into American River Hospital on May 30th, 1977, said his shoulder injury happened on May 28th, which was the date of the attack on number 22.
Right.
So the whole theory was that he fell jumping the fence into this narrow canal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a perfectly viable theory, but I really don't think that's our man anymore. I don't think this cop is going to do that.
Just personally, I want to ask you, when you first saw D'Angelo's picture, what was the reaction or the sort of wave of emotion you had when you finally saw that face?
I don't know. I just looked at it and said, my God, that's nothing anybody ever would have suspected. I mean, look at it. Look at all these different pictures on my Twitter account or on Facebook where I posted some of them. D do you really see, except in his Navy photo, something that looks like the sinister rapist that we've pictured from even averaging out some of these sketches? I mean, it's just not there. The first picture I saw was his Exeter picture when he's going to become a police officer. And I said, there. And I said, this cannot even be the guy. This is some pudgy 30-something. And he was actually about 27.
Did you have a moment?
Doesn't even look like him.
Did you have a moment?
And then his
thought...
quotation.
Yeah.
Did you see? Yeah. What is it? The paper write-up of him is, this is the Exeter newspaper. James DeAngelo Jr. believes that without law and order, there can be no government, and without a democratic government, there can be no freedom. Law enforcement is his career, he says, and his job is serving the community. Now, isn't that amazing? And this is one of the biggest violators. This is the guy I called the real-life Michael Myers, and I thought that was the only time I was ever good with promotion. And Ken Clark, the lead detective in Sacramento, said he is the closest thing to the boogeyman, which was another angle taken on, you know, at Halloween, where the, you know, this guy was the boogeyman.
Yep.
Carol Daly, who became undersheriff up here, and she was one of the original detectives on it, she said everything you picture, you know, from a horror movie, this guy was it.
Yeah.
So we were all echoing the same thing. This guy was an unstoppable stalking horror. And it turns out, you know, he's making these nice little statements about law and order while he goes out and basically is the number one serial predator in history.
He really is, isn't he? I mean, we don't even consider that.
He is now. If he is the Visalia ransacker, if he is one of the cat burglars in Rancho Cordova, how many breaking and enterings does he have? How many rapes does he really have? How many murders now does he really have?
You
how
said,
many are they going to discover?
You said before that he's confessed. He's made a confession.
I understand that he's talking.
He's talking.
Yeah.
Okay. That,
so I don't know if he was boozed up at the time or what. But
that was my next point. Was this guy is a chronic alcoholic? It sounds like. How much of it can really be taken as fact of what he's done that he confesses to?
Yeah, I don't know. If he confesses to sinking the Lusitania, we should all be concerned.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when they got him, I mean, that's drinking time. I mean, what, 10 p.m., 11 p.m.? That's, he's sitting down watching a Simpsons rerun, drinking. You
know? So who knows? Maybe he's just going to start confessing to everything and sound as crazy as he can be to get off on an insane charge.
Very true.
Which is what I'm worried about.
That, you know.
Mm.
They confessed to so much stuff that was absurdly not them that they tried to, you know, make it look like they were completely crazy and unreliable.
Yeah. Henry Lee Lucas did that, I recall.
Yeah, oh, quite a few of the guys that they arrested for the torso killings in Cleveland back in the 30s. He started confessing to stuff that they knew he wasn't even doing.
Wow. Yeah. It's like we kind of have to wait for the vetting, I guess, in a way.
If he is the Visalia ransacker, if he is the Cordova cat, he is EAR, obviously. If he's all these guys over this much of the state, and there has never been even a remotely accurate composite or sketch of him, then he really does break the mold for how he completely stalks so invisibly that all these other punks or people just passing through the streets are the ones responsible for all these sketches we see, that people... Once they were asked, did you see anybody suspicious? And, of course, they turned in whoever they saw.
Right.
And we have to admit that no one ever saw this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just cannot imagine he was ever seen if there isn't one sketch that's been released that's remotely close.
Well, it's like the one profile or the early profile said he would have the ability to blend in and look normal with the crowd. So that's something that's somewhat accurate. But all the sketches were very weird-looking guys. You know, it was just anybody creepy-looking. And the, you know, one looks like Jason Mewes. Yeah, yeah, very young. The Bill Mumy sketch is just a weird-looking guy. And the ones where he looks like Jay from Jay and Silent Bob, and it's just, you know, it's just, well, they're just strange.
Looks like that too.
Yeah, that's true.
All of them. The Verla Street one that I don't think I posted much, but it came out in the documentary, and I got a screen cap sent to me. This is a guy with short hair parted on the right, but you really can't say it's him. But, you know, these are people trying to, you know, remember an identikit from someone they saw at night prowling about, or who knows what they were doing.
Right.
But he has very short hair, so it could be him. But it's no one you could ever look at a picture in a yearbook or a mugshot and say, you know, boy, this guy's suspicious. I should refine my research on him. Because it looks like a young guy with pursed little lips. And
right. And, little weasley-looking guys.
Yeah. And this is I don't know. It's just amazing now to see how he really worked his stalking M.O. What, how many different angles he worked. The phone, but how did he do it? Auto-wrecking, did he really do that? Did he really work that? Did he have some connections to get these plates and cars? One of my contacts has gone back on Google to the address where he's lived for 30 years in Citrus Heights, and has gone to Street View, Historic Street View, and has picked up on 5 or 6 different cars parked out front. One including a 1980 white Continental. And so this guy seems to have a lot of different older cars and the newer ones that he's associated with. So I don't know if he'd like to do a little auto dealing on his own. There are some guys that do use car dealing on their own.
Right.
Buy a car low. As a cop, he would get good deals. You know, at the impound.
Mm-hmm.
At the auction.
Yeah. So clean it up, flip it. That. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and driving around a bit. And then selling it on his own, and who wouldn't buy from him? He's a trusted cop.
Right.
If you play aside from picking these things up on duty, doing this over years, and it would look like auto wrecking to the rest of us when it's a cop doing small-time used car dealing.
Mm-hmm.
And then driving the car in between and then selling it.
Yeah.
Because if the Haskell Avenue incident is for real, you have Marlon Weinberger, the detective who chased the guy, saw he was in this little dinky red Toyota or Datsun, tried to, you know, wave this guy down who pulled. He was on Haskell Avenue, so he chases this prowler. He's out on Locust Avenue now, Marlon Weinberger, the deputy.
Mm-hmm.
And this little Datsun starts up down the street by the apartments, comes down the street. Marlon Weinberger motions for him to stop so he could turn his car headlights onto the field where he thought the guy went.
Yeah.
And the car hits the gas, it swerves around him, and that's when Weinberger, you know, realizes this was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all worked together by the detectives, theoretically. This is why he was so upset at victim number 21 in Del Deo, which was struck a couple of hours later, because this was the first time he had been challenged, and he's going nuts with these people. They're saying the dirty pigs, the effing pigs. I'm going to kill my next people. I'm going to kill the effing pigs and all that. And you tell them or don't tell them. He was so goofed up. They said he was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So this was worked in theoretically that this was because he was just challenged a couple of hours earlier. He was chased off by a couple of guys, including a cop. And he was going to wreak vengeance on the police because of this. His manhood had been challenged. And who would imagine this is actually a cop himself calling these other cops pigs?
That is what's so mind-boggling about it. And I mean, there's other things like there was description of a horrible body odor, which I'm now thinking maybe because he was a drunk, maybe he was drinking before he was even committing the crimes.
Wouldn't a cop be spotted for that, though, having real alcohol problems?
Yeah, it seems like
repellent?
It. Yeah, it actually could have been the dog repellent.
That question. Someone posted that to me before I got on the show, saying, "Would dog repellent make the bloodhounds tracking him go goofy?" Because that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the handlers ever suspected that dog repellent might be used. This guy, I don't think, had a strange disease. I don't think he had a drug addiction as a cop.
Yeah.
That the dogs would detect that. But was it repellent? Does repellent have a smell? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But that is a fascinating possibility there. I think it would have a smell. That would it mixed with his sweat and everything. It would probably produce a really weird body odor. You know, I'm just guessing, and who knows what repellent of the 70s was like.
Because remember, they were picking up, they were shaking in the bathroom at one place and slobbering. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if this guy sprayed himself, knowing the dogs were tracking him now.
Yeah.
He was a cop, he would hear all this. So would he spray himself before and after to try and throw the dogs off? Or did he spray himself in the bathroom before he left? Mm-hmm. Was this something that people heard and didn't know what it was? Was he shaking the repellent? This you know, the sound of a bottle some people heard, like he's shaking a paint can?
Mm-hmm. Weird. Ooh. Yeah, and also
the repellent came in back then.
Right. Well, probably a can, perhaps a spray can, would be my guess, to be used on, you know, directly on the dog or whatever. Another thing was... Yeah, exactly. And another thing is the discrepancy in the different height descriptions. That's what really weirds me out. Is like he seems like he's 5'6". Sometimes he's, but he's never really described as being 5'11" or 6 feet, unless you want to count the Maggiore sighting. You know, that's I think maybe the only one where he was described as tall.
Yeah, 6'2" is what Carl Nolsch. Mm-hmm. Described him at, and then in the recent release of information, you know, I was so skeptical about that. That's when I started talking with the source there, with the sheriffs, to fact check my site, which I was very grateful for. And they said, no, he was 5'9", because the lady across the street came forward when Nolsch was reenacting with the detectives. Mm-hmm. And she said, I saw this happen. I know Carl personally. I know he's only 5'6". Mm-hmm. And this is how tall the assailant was compared to this knot on the tree. Mm-hmm. And she said he was no higher than 5'9", and that convinced the modern detectives that they had a much closer link with EAR, and in fact, Carl's estimation was a much closer link now we find out, since this guy was 5'11", and must have had shoes on, so he was about 5'6", with the shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
And, but no, they always said, you know, he was between 5'6 to 6 foot, but with all the fence jumping that the prowler in number 20's yard a few days before, mm-hmm. the neighbor said he had dark hair, which was correct, now we know.
Yeah.
And he was very short, and he leapt the fences like they were nothing. And too many said this guy was small.
Yeah, it's strange.
I thought he was on the shorter side.
Yeah, I believe it too, because it's consistent in those reports. It's consistent in the write-ups on your website and everything. That's what really threw me off. It's like, so he was, you know, like I remember there's the story of the mother getting to a shoving match with him and saying he wasn't very strong. So I was thinking he was a smaller guy. Yeah, like he wasn't a small guy, or he was a small guy, or he didn't have any upper body strength, which is, you know, still very possible if you're a cop.
And, and Shelby was collating stuff, and he said that she was not the only one to say he was pretty small, and that if he didn't have the gun, the victim felt they could have taken him. Well, I don't know, 5'11", 6 foot for a trained cop, I think is pretty intimidating.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They just really weren't seeing him in circumstances that helped them. That one... I use this in my dossier on one of my POIs. I said that incident in Orangevale where this old junker's driving along, the guy gets out, knocks on the door and has some stupid excuse, you know, about drywall or the heater or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the girl that answered the door said, this guy was just about 5'2". And I thought, and
that's a fair
she
discrepancy.
Was 5'1".
Yeah.
And then Margaret Wardlow, victim number 27, said, you know, that she was 5'2", and this guy was only a little taller than her.
Weird.
And how many said that? There was more who said this guy was really short, and he wasn't very strong. And now we find out he was a trained cop, and he's close to 6 foot tall.
Hey, have you spoken to any of the family members of victims today, since this is all coming
only
up?
Only Shelley. Only Michelle Cruz.
Okay.
I just messaged her and said, club me with a feather.
Yeah.
Yeah, that this, who would have suspected this? And she just sent me back a thumbs up on Facebook. I think she was pretty busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to CrimeCon in a week. And this is just overwhelming, because she put so much into it to get attention to this. And she wanted her sister vindicated, I know, and her family, because some nasty stuff was said to them about them in a recent publication that had no purpose and was not true at all.
Yeah.
And so she wanted to really get it out there. I was going to do a special page on Janelle for her, but it's not necessary anymore. Mm-hmm. She had agreed to that after Crime Con to just clean up that her sister was a very shy girl. She was not, she did not play around with guys. She had nothing but friends. And their mother was not a druggie at all. She started smoking marijuana after her daughter was murdered and her hair was falling out. She was so stressed. And so she started smoking some marijuana. Mm. And the recent publication made it sound as though Janelle was basically a little hoe, which she wasn't, and that the mother was a drug addict.
Yeah, rotating menu. Yeah, rotating menu of sex partners was what was said
in
that publication.
Yes, that is a quote, I believe.
Yeah. Disgusting. I was disgusted when I read it. Yeah, it's just trashy junk writing right there.
Anybody who had an understanding of the case without even trying to go after a person of interest, trying to apply this to actually go after someone, would know that the East Area Rapist, original Night Stalker, GSK, if you must, did not know his victims. He picked them by stalking. He wasn't working at a pizza parlor, now we know that. And he just refined and stalked that way. Now, he might have encountered a few from a distance. How would we ever know? How would they know? If he saw them in a parking lot at a grocery store and liked them and followed them from a distance and learned where they lived and then refined his prowling in there to get them, no detective could backwork that.
Yeah.
There's no link they can uncover. So that might be true, that he saw some from afar and was interested, but as for knowing them to where a detective could go back in their past and actually find a link to this guy, that was not even possible, or they would have found him.
Hey, just remind me again, I'm sorry if I've forgotten this, are there any still living victims who did see him face-to-face?
Well, number 15, victim 15... in Rancho Cordova, did see his open face. He had the balaclava on with the slit for the eyes.
Mm.
He had pulled it down under his chin to enjoy himself. And she looked up or down through the blindfold he had on, so she saw him at an angle with just his face showing, so the eyes, the nose, and the mouth. And then she went through hypnosis, and that produced that cartoon-like sketch of him. That was the only time he was seen in perpetration. And it produced, not even a real human-looking face.
Yeah.
Well,
and that was it. And then there was victim 40 or 43 who saw him in the rear, in the reflection in the mirror. She said, but then later she said it was in the car. And so no one knew how to take that, but he might have had a mole on his chin. He had a short neck, which doesn't appear to be the case. And just there was nothing that was really reliable. Unless it's not been released, because it was so at odds with what had been released that even the police didn't think it was important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just,
It's going to be a huge irony when we find out, all that he did do never produced a good composite, so he was never seen clearly, and he seems to be unstoppable, and yet he was holding down a full-time high-stress job like a police officer.
Yeah.
It's kind of just, I really thought the guy, worked his own wrecking business and didn't have any oversight and could take his time and lived in a little trailer home. And I inspired others. I thought, this is doing good. I happen to know of two other detectives who were following on my trail with car dealership families. In the Volkswagen dealership business and in the real estate business. And I had even, when one of them made a comment, a press release kind of like this, I won't say who, it was all well intended, but that he was convinced that EAR was in this certain type of profession in land development. And I realized who that was, and I just made an innocent comment on my blog, a couple of sentences, that this person is in my list of POIs, and I don't think, he's very good. That he's a good fit, because I knew he had brown eyes. I knew all evidence pointed he was out of the state early on. And it didn't go anywhere. I just was, it's a blog post. A month later, an attorney contacts me. Mm-hmm. And he says, from that little statement in your October 27 blog, I know exactly who you're talking about. And he gave me the right name.
Jeez.
And then he said he's working with Shelby. And they want to know more of my information because they can't trace one of these girlfriends in his early life. And, of course, I was cagey, and the guy finally gave up on me and said, you're too cryptic. But he insisted he knew that this was my person of interest, that I had turned him in officially to the task force, and now he had done so as well. And I had not turned this guy in, this member of a car-dealing family. Unofficially, I had discussed him unofficially with Orange County's people, that he was on my list because I was giving them a number of names. And so I was amazed that the number of detectives who were actually following on the car dealer of the wrecking angle. And I kind of, you know, swelled with pride. Well, at least I was so certain of my theory that I'm helping to inspire others who could take it beyond me because they've got badges. And they could, you know, really get this guy. And I thought, well, I've contributed. So all that came collapsing down now when we find out he's a cop.
I want to ask you, when was he terminated from the police force?
1979.
Okay, so it was... Okay, all right.
So he was a cop the whole time. I don't know the month. I forget the publication date when it's online now. Anybody can check it out.
But and when yeah, was he? So, when was the first crime committed by him, allegedly?
Who knows? Who knows?
First known that you can trace the timeline back to. Is it 79?
Well, EAR was officially June 18, 1976. That was the first rape, but now it might be October 1975.
So this guy would have been looking. This guy would have potentially been looking at composites of descriptions of himself, and knowing that's not me, looks nothing like me. That's fine, nothing like me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or even
I'm sure Auburn police were getting some of these.
Oh, of course, and also as well. I mean, I don't know the distance between Auburn and I'm sorry. I mean, I don't live in America, but is there any chance even? That he may have even spoken to victims and they were talking to him?
No, I don't think that. No, okay. He would not have been a detective within the jurisdiction. It's like my first RP who got so much attention because he was one of those. There was a group that I was very certain about, and he was up in Placerville at this time, and I thought, well, this matches everything, all these strikes. You know, EAR leaned toward Highway 50 all the time, and the northern area of Citrus Heights and over in Foothills Farm just seems too far for him. He strikes there late in the game. Well, in reality, he was living in Citrus Heights, and he was going to Auburn, which is just as far, I think, as Placerville. Maybe not as far, but pretty close, up Highway 80, whereas Placerville is up Highway 50. So he was doing the exact opposite of what all of his strikes showed. He was working far away up in the foothills. He was living in Citrus Heights, and he was sticking close to just the main thoroughfares of Manzanita and all those. He was laying down a pattern that looked like he didn't even live in the East area because he lived so far up in Citrus Heights that he came down and left a pattern that made it look like he was in Rancho Cordova or south of there or somewhere east along Highway 50.
You mentioned before about him screaming out effing pigs and all that sort of stuff, allegedly. When was that?
That was after the Haskell Avenue incident, so May 16, 1977.
Okay.
May 17, he struck at 1:30 a.m., so it was May 17. And then I think he did that after victim 22 as well. He was saying, I'm going to get the pigs, report this in the media, or if I don't, I'm going to kill my next two victims. And it really looked like he was very angry, and he was going to get even with the police.
Yeah, so he was trying to throw them off the trail, obviously, by
anti-police
sentiment.
And, you know, that's why I don't know what to... I always believed everything he was saying was a ruse anyway, because with victim number 9, he leads her out to the canal behind Greenleaf, and he says, you know, something about, I have to go before my parents get home. Or my parents miss me. And I thought, well, that really is indicating this guy is much older, that he's trying to, you know, make it look like he's still a kid. Then with another victim, he said she doesn't want it on TV because his mommy doesn't like it when she sees that kind of news. all this was indicating, you know, that he was really much older than he was trying to let on. And so I took even the sobbing, all that, as a ruse. Mm-hmm. The victims thought that his shivering was a ruse about his drugs, about his anger was just was false when he was, you know, hissing and snorting through his teeth and heavy breathing because he, you know, the drugs aren't there. Oh, man, no drugs. Everything was to make himself sound like he was this cheap punk. And it was such overkill that this guy really didn't come off as, you know, as being too witty, but, you know, clever enough to evade the police. But now he's college educated and what was it, juris something in law of some kind, and his wife was quite educated in chemistry.
Yeah.
Or forensics, was it? Forensics?
Yeah, and I think the daughter works as a lawyer or something, or one of his daughters. He has, I think, three daughters.
And I was not expecting college education. I was not expecting a very educated background.
Yeah, me neither.
But I knew he was smarter than he let on, but...
Hmm.
Find out he was this educated that he was this much in law enforcement.
I bet your phone would have been ringing off the hook today, wouldn't it?
It was. I was supposed to be on the BBC, but they canceled early on. A lot of stuff online, emails coming in, the blog, Facebook, Twitter was going wild. Got only one nasty message from a person that said, you were completely wrong, give up and go away. You know, well, everybody...
No, there's always one. There's always
we don't know how wrong some of us were.
Yeah.
We still don't know all that he was doing.
So I couldn't have been as wrong as you. I would have said to this guy, well, you had the right answer. Why didn't you put him in years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. What a day, huh?
It is. It's unheard of that there's this kind of solution to a case that's famous now that is this prolific. It's not like BTK. It's not like the Green River Killer 20 years after the fact where DNA got a guy they had suspected. This is someone who really made an intelligent assault out of his crime. You know, he stalked a home in a neighborhood like it was a military assault. And he made himself look like a completely irrational, petty burglar, which he may have enjoyed just stealing these little things. He may have been the cat burglar. So he had perfected one of the highest risk rare crimes there is, which is cat burglary. That is extremely rare. And, of course, the victims have to be asleep inside the house in the wee hours of the morning for the burglar, or wee hours of night, for the burglar to even be classified as a cat burglar because he's that quiet, he's that careful.
Did you say
he can walk right by you and take something from your dresser and you don't know it?
Yeah. Did you say that there was a collection of items found by the daughter? And if
I believe a few of the items that he stole, maybe the plateware, she recognized from Sacramento County, probably releasing pictures of that recently.
Mm.
And so that convinced her to go to Ventura. Or the FBI and Ventura, as I understand it, they were the ones central of all this. And then she surreptitiously, as I understand it, got the DNA from, I don't know, glass he was drinking from or something. Mm. And they got his DNA pretty quick and then got him, you know, the police were sitting out in his house even the day before, and they got him at the right time to take him in alive and well.
I think it's safe
to say. How much he's going
to
be charged with now, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's all. It's all within 24 hours, isn't it, of this, you know, happening that we're recording this. So it's still in its very, very early stages. I think there'll be a lot more to come out to share.
It's going to get quite complex. And maybe he's going to, through testimony, he's going to convince the police that he didn't do some of these. Some of these crimes may be knocked off the list, some of these rapes. He may not have been the one, because sometimes the rapist was described by the victims as radically different in areas where you couldn't imagine they could make a mistake.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah, the offending organ was described differently on a few occasions. It's much larger than the others had ever described it.
Yeah, because wasn't this described as micro penis or something?
Yes. Yeah, it's very small, and then the other time as big as a dollar bill. And then, you know, his eye color was described by one of the victim's children on Kipling as deep blue. It was beyond doubt that it was blue.
Surprised they didn't say red.
By that time, that DNA had proven. I did have restricted information on that, which it can be released now. It's not a big deal. But DNA had proven that 97% probability he had green to hazel eyes.
Yeah.
97% probability against blue eyes. And so either that kid was very mistaken or that was somebody else. Because if you look at his mugshot in color now, you see he does have hazel eyes.
Yeah.
Hey, just a question.
Go ahead, Stu.
John, do you plan on going to his trial if he's put on trial?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I was in this to solve it or contribute to it. I wasn't going to write a book. This was not something I was going to feed off of. I got so sick of the case, I wanted away from it, and I got sick from the case.
Yeah.
And so that, I've done my contribution, hopefully. I'm going to just try and organize what's on the Q files for educational purposes, as I had said in the beginning, for a year or so, however long is necessary to leave it up, and then it comes down, because it's no point anymore.
Yep. Okay, solved.
I don't want to become a reporter of it, and I have other cases I want to deal with. I like to crack mystery. I don't want to hang off this case. It's done nothing but cost me money. It's not going to do anything else for me.
But you have to understand now, with all this happening, that you most likely will be either referenced or pointed towards as somebody to speak to about it, because you had such a vested interest for so many years on it. I mean, do you know what I mean? You
think he might want to speak to somebody?
Well, yeah, people might want to.
If my presence is requested, I will go talk to him. But from this guy's mugshot, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, he looks like, you know, where am I right now? his eyes are pretty dead. But, I mean, it looks like, you know, oh, hey, guys. Well, what is that? Is that a camera?
He looks like Bam Margera's uncle.
You know, the mighty have fallen.
Yeah. John, I was curious about this. Is the child that described the blue, like a bull tattoo on his arm under hypnosis? Yeah, I'm curious if that's going to be confirmed, if he has that, because that's I've always found this to be interesting.
Oh, I never really believed he had one. He might have had something, but maybe it's a Navy tattoo. I don't know.
Very true. And just look like a bull in the
Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know. I didn't even think about the tattoo. I assumed it didn't go many places because I thought someone would recognize a tattoo like that and turn someone in.
Right.
But who knows how social this guy was.
Mm-hmm.
He helped his neighbors out sometimes, and they thought he was just, you know, kind of a nice guy, but would get too much of a nose full.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd hear him shouting down the block. That would be interesting if he has a Navy tattoo and it's an anchor.
Yeah.
And that looked like a bull.
Which might look like a bull to a kid not familiar with Navy tattoos.
An anchor on a Navy guy.
Right. Wow.
That's going to be perfectly normal. He wouldn't have to hide a tattoo like that.
Yeah. Very true. It's a stunning case. It's just absolutely stunning.
It is. And then a Volkswagen was heard here and there to start. He was most identified with all these different cars. They had tire tracks in the field behind number 7, he was most often identified with the Volkswagen, and I wonder just if all that was coincidence.
Yeah.
How many cars could this guy have had? A 30-year-old cop, I don't think, was driving a Volkswagen unless, like we speculated, he was just, you know, petty dealing and used cars, turning them over himself for a little extra profit.
Right. I think it's what started the whole... Yeah, the surf... I think for a while there was rumors of a surf gang or something, Haskell Avenue, Skull something, I don't know, whatever the hell it is. And, you know, I guess surfers were known to sometimes drive Volkswagens to Santa Cruz or wherever. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and that was
hanging out.
Exactly. So that was the big theory. And, you know, it'll be fascinating to learn about his forays into the Bay Area, where he committed crimes, and places like Hayward, I think, and Concord, and some of those crimes are extremely weird.
Creek.
Yeah, yeah. There's some really
Fremont, San Jose. He followed Highway 680.
Yeah.
You'd like to know what took him down south.
Yeah.
And then clearly he was not familiar with the area that well, because he strikes very far apart now and he remains very close to the highways, just like he did with Contra Costa County. Mm-hmm. And everything always pointed that he was quite familiar with Sacramento.
Just how did he live? And another thing is, assuming he is the Visalia ransacker as he claims, how he goes from ransacking and murder to just a string of rapes where there is no murder, and then suddenly he's back. He's escalated to murder towards the end. So it's really strange.
He murdered as the ransacker, unless it was like with Snelling in defense.
Mm-hmm.
If he did kill the Majoras, it was in defense. It was to keep his appearance,
right,
from being ever seen. If he did shoot Rod Miller and was not another. I just, with the composite there, I cannot believe it because the hair is so long.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fence jumper in La Riviera had short hair just a month before the shooting of Rod Miller. Now, he could not have grown his hair out that long in that time unless he wore a wig.
Right, and that's what's been put forth by some of the typical board posters. They're like, well, maybe he wore disguises. You know, I just don't know. Yeah, it's a possibility.
But he never wore glasses. I don't think the guy needed glasses.
Yeah.
Because he had good vision. Mm-hmm. And you'd think so at night for all that he did.
Right.
Through fields and orchards and everything and through canals. The guy must have had really good vision.
Yeah, had that kind of freaky night vision that some people have who like to go jogging at night and such. Yeah.
It's just, I think everybody is stunned, from law enforcement to everybody else, that this is... But this is the guy. It makes sense. Of course, I'd said he was the unsuspected. And someone who didn't even care for my work admitted that you were right, at least there, that he was the unsuspected.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking in terms of age, or outside of the, that he drove quite a distance. And obviously he started doing that. And if he is the Visalia ransacker living in Exeter, then he drove quite a bit of, distance to Visalia.
Mm-hmm.
But why he confined himself to a very narrow area of Visalia, I don't know. If I can explain that.
Yeah, and the irony is that somebody dug up an article where he was part of an anti-burglary squad in Exeter while he was a Visalia ransacker. Yes, yes, that's surfaced recently.
So he knew what to,
what
to do and what to look out for.
Exactly. It's like, there you go.
It's like the Visalia ransacker does come off like he's a demented kid, what he's doing.
Right.
The what we know about the pre-stalking to the Majora double murders that was released recently by Sacramento County Sheriffs, and I put a whole article out in detail about each event. This really sounds like a crazy perv that's got too much time on his hands. He's making these phone calls. He's beginning to stalk through La Loma, through these different places on El Toro Court. El Toro Court, he is so interested in this lady, he continues to break her gate to get in, to look in her window, and then he draws pictures on the bedroom window in bodily fluids.
Yeah.
This just doesn't even sound like the sophisticated strategist, which he must have been to some extent, to have gone on this prolific without ever being seen.
It's almost as if he was pretending he was a young perv and he was an older cop. Like, he felt like he was playing the role of a young perv. It's strange. It's really weird.
I don't know he wasn't linked with the Majora double murder back then.
Yeah.
I guess the rape task force and the homicide guys weren't talking, because I don't think they made a connection. They may not have known about a lot of this canvassing. But, and he starts his crime spree. I mean, I started analyzing the types of shoes he was wearing to try and figure out how he was learning. But he starts his crime spree wearing waffle stompers, which are not, fence-scaling boots. These are not a prowler's boots. And that dominates, these heavy boots dominate his first seven. Well, with number seven, he wears tennis shoes for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like he's progressing.
Yeah.
Here's this Navy guy. Now we find out that he's trying to cut the phone line commando style of number one. victim number one on Paseo Drive by getting on a birdbath and trying to actually cut the phone wire leading into the house from the power pole. And then it sounds like an amateur beginning.
Yeah.
And then he's got these big waffle stompers on. You know, it's like, this does not sound like a very knowledgeable cop.
Right.
Now we find out he's anti-burglary, and this doesn't even sound like a knowledgeable prowler.
Yeah.
This sounds like someone who realizes by number seven, he's really getting into this and enjoying it, he better switch to careful tennis shoes and prowling at night.
Hmm.
And there is nothing here that adds up to who it points to. You know, all the details, the devil's in the details. Well, in this case, all the details would have fouled up Sherlock Holmes. They don't fit. The devil's in the details, and they point to someone completely different than an active police officer.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Jeez. It's just a stunner. It's like the two things that get me. He was a cop and the height. That's the two things that really threw me off.
Yeah. And the fact he didn't even look like the composites.
Yeah. Jeez. It's unreal.
You really have to stretch it with the Majora case.
Yeah.
And then this guy's retreating, the Majora double murderer, if this is him that people continue to see. He's retreating all the way up Las Casas, which goes to a dead end up in Rancho Cordova, and he's just, where is he going there? This is where he had parked victim number eight's car as well before 1976. So it looks like this guy is retreating further into Rancho Cordova and has some kind of lair there, or right across the canal in Moraine Circle, which is where I was concentrating on some canvassing. And now, I don't know, you know, he had to have been parked, I think, on the other side of the canal, but how he stalked a community is quite, at least at that time, is quite curious, if that was him.
Yeah.
I see no reason to dispute that, considering with victim eight, he took her car.
Right.
Parked it up there, you know, close by on El Segundo, further into Rancho Cordova's dead end.
Well, like I said, we're going to now look over this case and go, well, of course, he was a cop and he was ex-military and he was, you know, he was in the anti-burglary squad and all this. Now it all fits together. But it's like for years, it seemed like everybody wanted to rule that out. And I'm just glad he's behind bars today. So it's definitely a positive note.
I just don't think I'd ever go there. I just cannot see anything that suggests this guy was a cop or anything. Really seemed like he was a guy in his 20s to 30s who had a real problem, even a late teenager when he started, like they had thought at one point. He was just progressing from his clumsy attempt with number one, with his stupid attempts to wear waffle stompers, hiking boots, to tennis shoes, with the biking sometimes, and then arriving at a couple of places naked from the waist down. This was like a real weirdo.
Yeah.
But you guys said that he had a previous military training, had seen combat. My question is, wouldn't that have fast-tracked him into the police force, or would it have been a lot harder to get in due to the potential PTSD that comes with it?
Back then, they would not have thought of that, I think.
No?
Yeah, it wasn't an issue back then. I don't even think they used that term. I think they might say, trench sickness, or they had different
shell
names
shock.
For it. Shell shock, okay. Yeah, shell shock was common. If you watch World War II movies as well, he was if 5'11", he stood a good height, and if he had been in the military, I think he would have been fast tracked into the police force.
Oh yeah, I would agree. That was usually the fastest way in. For you either went into security or you could get into law enforcement really quick after it being in the military with a good record. And he was in the Navy. I don't think he would have gotten shell shock in Vietnam. There was no Navy for our Navy
right.
Tonight.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a flyer, so he was not engaging in real action. I don't know what combat he saw. He was on one of the boats that went up the river or what?
Not a Navy SEAL that we know. So it's not. He wasn't one of those guys.
Do we know, his military record? What if he was honorably discharged?
As
he was.
Yeah. As of this writing, his military record is not out there.
Yeah.
But, or as of this recording, but you know, that may break by the time this show reaches the podcast world.
I guess so. You'd have to be in order to get into the police force.
I would think so. Yeah, dishonorable discharge. He's not going to become a cop.
No.
Yeah, he'd be. He may be a security guard at best.
Yeah. Okay. All right, boys. Well, I don't know what more I can add to it. Do you guys have any final parting thoughts or comments you want to give out there?
I don't know. I'm glad it's over. I'm free of it. I should not have made it such a public investigation, but I had that stupid piety from everything people and victims were telling me about what was going on online, and no one knew what to trust, so I was going to make my investigation very public and keep people as informed as I could, whether I was right or wrong or failed or whatever. And I regret that, because the nasty emails I have gotten over the years by a lot of nutcases, people that you'd be surprised what type likes to follow a case like this. Mm. And I was actually specifically told by two major detectives on the case that whatever they told me was very, you know, legal and proper for them to tell me for information on the website, but they did not wish to be credited by me because they were tired of all the emails they get.
Jeez.
And all these cranks out there were actually sending emails to the badges. And, are, you know, you really think you're doing anything good by doing this and looking into old records, and this is a stupid theory, and this guy obviously looked like this, you don't know what you're doing. I think Erica Hutchcraft received an awful lot of nasty stuff. I never spoke with her, I didn't know her, but I was asked to, if I did write about Janelle Cruz, that I would say very nice things about Erica, and I said, well, I, you know, had nothing bad to say. But I think they'd just gotten so sensitive down there from the nasty feedback from some people online that the actual jurisdictions were shy to even, you know, to even talk with somebody anymore. It was that bad, and which is a shame, because it limited a lot of information that should have been coming out already by qualified law enforcement. They were able to release a lot more, I think, than they did, because there was just so much... so much negative feedback, and I was being twisted around by some people who, you know, one of them on YouTube got into the financial records of Anne Marie Schubert, the district attorney in Sacramento County, of Paul Holes, the criminalist in Contra Costa, and Erica Hutchcraft in Orange County, and they were posting their financial statements for their job. You know, why are they spending this much money and not doing this and that? And there was that kind of stuff going on that was simply pointless. I'm trying to make themselves a name in the case.
God.
And so, unreal. I, as a parting shot, I would just, in future, for other mysteries, I'm going to not be so public, whether right or wrong. I'm just going to try and investigate and do what I can to help.
Would you say this is the one that has, you know, physically and emotionally drained you the most?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got sick from the case.
Oh, Lord.
I seriously got sick while I was doing all the research, trying to get it online. It's amazing what it takes to design a single page, and I have 80, 90, 100 pages on this. Get all those little pictures into their icon form so you can click on them, and pulls up in Lightbox, and there's the caption and all the writing, all the research, all the traveling I did. I thought I was really going to help people, because there was nothing like this on the web. There was really no topography out there. People might have had a few pictures on a message board, but I went to all the locations, I filmed them, I tried to restock how this guy stalked the community, which was the only time I enjoyed myself, when I actually discovered something new by walking around, like with number 14, it happened with victim 14, I was walking around where the car had been parked, the old Chevy on Knollwood, and I found this little walking lane that you can't see on Google Earth because there's all these trees blocking it, and it walks between the community, and it comes right out over a canal, and there's a little forested area and a school, and you can hook right up with the street behind the victim's house. And that's when the light came on, and I realized how this guy stalked communities. And that was the only real stimulating time I had when I found something new like that. Otherwise, it was just very depressing, very time-consuming.
Well, until today.
Talking with people.
Until what? Today. Until today, anyway.
Well, I'm glad it's all over now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You sound relieved. I'm sure not just yourself, but there's many other people out there associated with the crimes of Eons who are very, very relieved people out there.
Yeah. It's finally the guy got it. The guy that had been so much evil, and now he's going to pay for it. I was afraid he had died, and in doing so had escaped justice. Another one who simply got away with his crimes and lived out his life just fine. And but now I'm glad that he's alive, that he's been caught, and he'll have to suffer.
Yeah.
One last question I have before we finish up is, do you have a small undercurrent of fear that this whole... what's the term? Not the investigation, the capture and then subsequent trial might just go to shit and he gets off due to the long statute of limitations that have lapsed?
Well, he can't be tried for any of the rapes.
Okay.
He'll be tried for the murders. There's no statute of limitations on murders, so he'll be in jail the rest of his life.
Okay.
I don't know if they'll be able to get him for the Majora double murders, but they'll get him for those that have DNA. I think maybe it's more ceremonial that Sacramento issued a warrant for him against those. I just don't know what they could possibly have to prove in a court of law that he did it, because there's no DNA. How do you know it was him out there? How do you know it was, you know, the sketch really doesn't look too much like him?
No.
How do you know?
Was there any DNA
with... But him in Orange County.
Yeah. Was there any DNA with the Cruz case?
Yeah.
There was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the first one.
That was the first one.
First DNA they had, yeah.
Was from Janelle, okay.
And Larry Poole pushed for that to be compared with Ventura, and finally, because he compared it with the other Orange County ones, and that's what they realized then with Ventura and Orange County, they had the same guy. And then it went from there to the Santa Barbara, and that's when they realized they had what they called the Night Stalker was on the loose down there. But it wasn't until 2000 and... I think that was 1997 or something that came about. And then 2001, they were able to link because Paul Holes pushed for it. He was the criminalist in Concord. And then they were able to link to the DNA up there that they had from the East Area Rapist attacks. So it was only past 15 or so years that people really knew this guy had this kind of encompassing crime career. And then, of course, the Visalia Ransacker link was always debated because the descriptions were so different. There was little reason to believe they were the same person. But now apparently they are. Apparently he was prolific, that he's got a couple of hundred break-ins, I don't know how many rapes, attempted murders, murder of Snelling, if that was him. So what are we talking about, 13, 14 murders?
Yeah. Attempted shooting of a police officer if he's the Visalia Ransacker. It's weird.
Yes, attempted shooting of Rod Miller if he's that one.
Yep. Oh, it's crazy.
He tried to kill two more people if he was the one involved.
Mm-hmm.
And how? What other times did he go into a rage and kill someone that we don't even know about?
Yeah. God. Man.
It's going to take quite an awful lot of DNA district attorney research to coordinate all this between the jurisdictions and finally bring him to a trial. I wonder how long it will take them to bring him to trial before they're satisfied they can get him for everything.
Jeez.
It'll be a long trial, I assure you. This will be big news.
Yeah.
Wow. People trying to live off of this, trying to claim that they were the ones that engineered it all.
Jeez. Man, what a mess.
Yep. Hey, did this news make outside of California, or was it countrywide, or was it just...
It was moderately countrywide. It was a top story on National Public Radio in the U.S. as of 5 o'clock this afternoon when I was driving home, so...
Okay. And how long did that press conference go for?
About half an hour, I think, or an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we better leave it there.
I'm finished for tonight.
I'm sure you've had
on my roof right now trying to get in. Okay. Well, I better go out and look. Something sounds pretty dangerous out there.
All right.
The original night possum, probably. I don't know what it is. All but right. Anyway, thanks, Jean, for coming back on at very, very, very short notice. I know you've had a huge day, and let's just say we got something over the BBC. We got you when they couldn't. So up yours, yeah. BBC. Pack of idiots.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, anytime, my friend. Anytime. All right. And with that, we're just going to cut it short. And I'll say in the immortal words of Hunter, adios.
And I'll say peace out.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.